urge the contact caused. He immediately pulled back. He felt like a teenager again. "I don't know what to do," he whispered. She lowered herself to his chest, flattening her breasts against him. "Just don't let go." He wound his arms around her and reversed their positions, rolling her over onto some sage. Again, it was so familiar. He kissed her hard, and she grabbed his hair and wound her legs around him. He couldn't make love to her. Not right now. She wasn't thinking straight, and she didn't want consequences tomorrow. That's why she wanted him to forget. "No, don't stop," she said when he broke the kiss. "I'm not stopping," he said, kissing her neck as his thumbs hooked into the sides of her plain white underwear. Her abdominal muscles jumped nervously as he pulled them down. He kissed her breasts, took one nipple in his mouth. He could almost remember doing this to her once, but he didn't understand. He'd never been with Claire before. Then he remembered. It was that dream. He'd dreamed this all before. He knew exactly what was going to happen, the smell around them, how she would taste. Everything about Claire screamed fate, and everything that had brought him here to Bascom, following dreams that never came true, led him to this. The one dream that did. The next morning, Claire felt a swish of air and heard a thud echo in her ear coming from the ground beside her. She opened her eyes, and there was a small apple about 6 inches from her face. Another thud, and another apple appeared beside it. She'd fallen asleep outside again. She'd done it so many times before that she didn't even think. She just sat up, shaking dirt out of her hair, and automatically reached for her gardening tools. But something wasn't right. First of all, the ground she used to leverage herself up was soft and warm. And the air seemed to feel a little cooler on her skin. She felt a little... She looked down and gasped. She was naked! And that soft, warm ground beside her was Tyler! His eyes were open and he was smiling. "Good morning." Everything came back to her. Every humiliating, cathartic, erotic thing he'd done to her. But then she realized she was sitting there naked, staring at him like an idiot. She slapped an arm over her bare breasts and looked around for her nightgown. Tyler was lying on it. She tugged on it, and he sat up. She pulled the gown over her head, relishing the brief time she could hide her face behind the fabric. Oh, God! Where was her underwear? She saw them by her feet and snatched them up. "Don't say anything," she said as she stood. "You promised me you would forget everything. Don't say a word about this." He rubbed at his eyes sleepily, still smiling. "Okay." She stared at him again. He had dirt and time in his hair. He still had on his shorts, but his chest was bare. He had red splotches all over his skin. Burn marks from her, and yet he didn't seem to mind. Not then, not now. How could he do that, all of that, last night, for no pleasure on his part, just for her? She turned and started walking down the pathway, but stopped when he said, "You're welcome." For some reason, that made her feel better. He was being an asshole. He expected her to thank him. She turned around. "Excuse me?" He pointed to the ground beside him. "You wrote it. Here." Curious, she walked back to him and looked. There on the ground were the words, "Thank you," raised in the dirt, as if written from underneath. She let out a growl of frustration and picked up one of the apples. She threw it as hard as she could at the tree. "I didn't write that," she said, and stormed away. Fat raindrops began to fall as she ran out of the garden. By the time she'd reached the house, the sky had opened up and it was pouring. Fred drove home in the rain that evening, thinking about James. He was always alone when he let himself think of him, afraid that someone might see him and know what he was doing. Fred had always known he was gay, But when he met James his freshman year at Chapel Hill University, he thought he finally understood why. Because he was meant to be with James. Fred's mother had died in her bed when he was 15. His father died at the kitchen table when Fred was in college. That's when Fred had to drop out and leave James to come home and take over the store. He thought it was his father's final punch to take Fred away from something that finally brought him joy, regardless of what people thought. But after a tearful goodbye at school, to Fred's surprise, James showed up in Bascom 3 weeks later. Eventually, with time on his hands, James took classes at Orion while Fred ran the store. He got his degree in finance and a commuter job in Hickory. Over the years, he encouraged Fred to get rid of everything that reminded Fred of his father and his cruelly withheld approval. It was James who said, "Let's go out to eat. Let's go to the movies. Let's dare the people of this town to say something." And what was once youthful indiscretion, 2 21-year-olds quitting school and moving in together, finally answerable to no one, turned into more than 30 years of companionship. To Fred, those years seemed to pass like quickly skimming a book, and then finding the ending wasn't what he expected. He wished he had paid more attention to the story. He wished he'd paid more attention to the storyteller. He drove to Evenell's house. He'd forgotten his umbrella, so he had to run to the porch in the rain. He stopped at the door to take off his wet jacket and shoes. He didn't want to get water all over her nice floors. When he walked in, he didn't see Evenell anywhere, so he called out her name.
"I'm up here," she said,
and he followed her voice to the attic. Evenell was trying to sweep the sawdust that the workers had produced that day, but it was like trying to sweep tiny birds who flew away in a flurry when you touched them. She was wearing a white face mask, because every sweep of her broom sent the sawdust birds into the air, making the entire space beige and smoky. "Please don't do this. I don't want you to wear yourself out," Fred said, walking over to her and taking her broom. Being left makes you doubt your ability to keep people, even friends. He wanted Evenell to be happy he was there, to do all he could for her. He couldn't bear to lose her, too. The workers will clean up when they're done. Evenell still had on the mask, but the skin around her eyes crinkled in a smile.
"It's coming along real nice up here, don't you think?"
"It looks great," he said.
"It's going to be great."
As soon as he moved his things in, that is. But that involved going back to his house, something he'd been avoiding.
"What's the matter?"
Evenell asked, sliding the mask up and resting it on the top of her head like a beanie.
"I had some bag boys drop off boxes at my house today. I'm finally going over there to do some packing. I was thinking of renting out the house."
"What do you think?" he asked, eager for her opinion. She nodded.
"I think it's a fine idea. You know you can stay here with me as long as you want. I love having you."
He let out a wet laugh, full of sudden tears in the back of his throat.
"You love having a fool with a broken heart around?"
"Some of the best people I know are fools," Evenell said. "The strongest people I know."
"I don't know how strong I'm being."
"Trust me, even Phineas Young would be in awe." "Want me to go with you to your house?"
He nodded. He wanted that more than he could say. It was the first time since James had taken his things out that Fred had been in the house. He looked around the living room. It felt strange to be here now, and he didn't want to linger. This place wasn't home without James. It was just a lot of bad memories of Fred's father. Evenell walked into the living room behind him, her shoes squeaking on the hardwood floors.
"Whoa," she said. "This place sure looks better than the last time I saw it. It was right after your mother died. God rest her soul, she sure did like her pictures of Jesus."
She reached over and rubbed the back of the soft leather reading chair.
You've got some nice stuff.
I'm sorry I never invited you here, Ivano. I left that all up to James.
Don't worry. I don't get invited places. It's just a fact.
You should, Fred said, looking at her curiously. You're a good person.
Nothing I can do about it now. It all started in 1953. I tried to fight it, but you have to understand. When I have to give someone something, I have to do it. Drives me crazy if I don't.
What happened?
I had to give Luanna Clark condoms, and you couldn't get condoms in Bascom in 1953. I had to go all the way to Raleigh to get them. My husband drove me there, and he kept telling me it was a bad idea. I couldn't help it, though.
Fred found himself laughing. Even in 1953, giving someone condoms wasn't so bad, was it?
It wasn't the what. It was the who. I told Luanna that I had something to give her in church the next day. I was trying to do it private. She was with her friends and said real uppity like, "Well, give it to me, Ivanel," like it was her due. You know, Clarks and Waverleys have never gotten along. Anyway, I gave them to her right there in front of her friends. Oh, I'm leaving out the most important part. Luanna's husband lost his private parts in the war. My name was Mud, but it got even worse when Luanna got pregnant a year later. She should have used those condoms. After that, everyone got this look when I was around them, like I was going to tell their secrets. Not the sort you invite to dinner. I didn't really mind so much until my husband died.
This old woman was his hero. No doubt about it. You are who you are, whether you like it or not, so why not like it? Fred walked up to her and extended his elbow. I would be honored, Ivanel, to make you dinner tonight. An invitation-only affair. With a laugh, she put her arm in his.
Well, aren't you the one?
Chapter 11. If you need us, Bay and Henry and I are going to be at Lunsford's Reservoir. His housekeeper stays with his grandfather until only 5 o'clock, so he'll be dropping us off before then. No later than 5 o'clock, Sidney said, as if trying to calm Claire down. We'll be back. Claire closed the lid to the picnic basket, raised the handles, and handed it to Sidney. She must have really scared Sidney that night a week ago. But as long as Claire pretended it was all okay, maybe it really was. Sidney and Henry had spent a lot of time together this past week. Dinners with Bay, mostly. On Sunday, they went to the movies. Claire tried to tell herself that it was a good thing. She used that time alone to can and weed the garden and catch up on paperwork, all secure and routine things. She needed that. Those were her constants. Will you be okay there? Claire asked, following Sidney out of the kitchen. Of course. Why wouldn't we be? It's pretty far out, and you'll be all alone. Sidney laughed and set the basket by the front door. We'll be lucky if we find a place to eat our lunch. The reservoir is always crowded in the summer.
Even on a Monday?
Even on a Monday. Oh, Claire said, embarrassed. I didn't know. I've never been there.
So come with us, Sidney said, just as she'd said every time she went out this past week.
What?
No. Yes.
Sidney grabbed Claire's hands. Please. You have to stop saying no to me. It will be fun. You've lived here most all your life, and you've never been to the reservoir. Everyone goes to the reservoir at some point. Come on. Please.
I don't think so. I really want you to come, Sidney said, squeezing Claire's hands hopefully.
Claire felt a familiar anxiousness, or maybe it was a learned anxiousness. It was how her grandmother always acted at the thought of doing something purely social, as if she wanted to curl up like a cutworm until the threat passed. Work was fine. Claire didn't socialize when she worked. She communicated.
She said what needed to be said, or she didn't say anything at all. Unfortunately, this didn't translate well into a social setting. It made her seem rude and standoffish, when it was only a sincere and desperate effort not to do or say anything foolish. "I'm sure you and Henry want this time together."
"No, we don't," Sydney said, suddenly serious. "We're just friends. We've always been friends. That's what I like about him. This is for Bay. You pack the picnic. At least come eat it. Hurry, go change."
Claire couldn't believe she was actually considering it. She looked down at her white capris and sleeveless shirt.
"Change into what?"
"Shorts. Or a swimsuit if you want to go swimming."
"I don't know how to swim."
Sydney smiled, like she already knew that.
"Want me to teach you?"
"No," Claire said immediately. "I mean, no, thank you. I'm not a fan of large bodies of water."
"Does Bay know how to swim?"
Sydney went into the sitting room, where she'd left two quilts and a beach bag full of towels. She carried them to the foyer and set them by the picnic basket. Yes, she had lessons in Seattle. Claire instantly perked up.
"Seattle?"
Sydney took a deep breath and nodded. That tidbit of information hadn't just slipped out. Sydney had told her on purpose. A first step. "Seattle. That's where Bay was born." So far, she'd mentioned New York and Boise and Seattle. They were cities farther north than the ones their mother had traveled to. Lorelei had gone due west after leaving Bascom. Claire herself had been born in Shawnee, Oklahoma. Maybe bad things had happened to Sydney and Bay, bad things Sydney still didn't want to tell Claire about, but Bay's welfare had been and still was a priority to Sydney. She had signed Bay up for swimming lessons, after all. That alone made Sydney a better mother than Lorelei had ever been. There was a honk outside, and Sydney called,
"Come on, Bay!"
Bay came running down the stairs. She was wearing a bathing suit under a yellow sundress.
"Finally," she said as she shot out the door.
"Okay, don't change." Sydney took a pink canvas sun hat out of her bag and put it on Claire's head. "Perfect. Let's go." She dragged Claire out of the house. Henry took Claire's addition to their party gracefully. Sydney said that they were just friends, but Claire wasn't sure if Henry felt the same way. There were times when he looked at her sister and his whole body seemed to go transparent, losing himself in her. He had it bad. Claire and Bay had climbed into the back seat of the King cab, and Sydney was about to lift herself into the front seat when Claire heard her sister call,
"Hi, Tyler!"
Claire immediately turned in her seat to see Tyler getting out of his Jeep in front of his house. He was wearing cargo shorts and a crazy Hawaiian shirt. This was the first time since the garden that she'd seen him, and her breath caught. How did people act after something like that? How on earth did people live and function after intimacy? It was like telling a secret to someone, then immediately regretting that they knew. The thought of actually talking to him now made her face chili pepper hot.
"We're going to the reservoir for a picnic. Want to come?"
Sydney asked him.
"Sydney, what are you doing?"
Claire demanded, and Henry looked at her in the rearview mirror curiously. She felt a little ashamed that he could be so gracious about inviting people along, and she couldn't.
"I'm teaching you to swim," Sydney answered cryptically.
"I have a night class tonight," Tyler called. "We'll be back in time."
"Then sure, I'm in," Tyler said, and walked toward them. When Claire saw that Sydney was going to open the back door, she nearly hurt herself climbing over Bay so Bay would be in the middle, a kiddie buffer between her and Tyler. But she felt ridiculous when Tyler started to climb in and saw her.
"Claire," he said, stopping short. "I didn't know you were going, too."
When she finally got the nerve to meet his eyes, she didn't find anything hidden there. No telltale sign that he was thinking of her secret. He was just Tyler. Should that be a relief, or should that make her more worried? As soon as they were off, Tyler asked Claire, "So, what's this reservoir?" Claire tried to think of something normal to say. She couldn't casually mention that she'd been there before. She couldn't even say that she'd ever been to a picnic that she didn't cater. But Claire, not knowing what she was doing, could come as no surprise to him of all the people in the truck. She'd been nothing but a contradiction since she met him. "Go away. Come closer. I know enough. I know so little. I can handle anything. Look how easily I break." "I've never been there," she finally admitted. "Ask Sydney, our social director." Sydney turned in her seat. "It's a popular swimming hole. Lots of teenagers and families with young kids go there in the summer. And at night, it's something of a lover's lane."
"And how do you know that?" Tyler asked. Sydney grinned and wagged her eyebrows.
"You went out there at night?" Claire asked. "Did Grandma know what you were doing? Are you kidding? She said she used to go out there at night all the time when she was a teenager."
"She never told me that." "She probably worried about all the flies zooming into your wide-open mouth."
Claire snapped her mouth shut. "I didn't think she did things like that."
"Everyone does something like that at least once in their lives."
Sydney shrugged.
"She was young once."
Claire snuck a look at Tyler. He was smiling.
He'd been young once, too.
Claire had always wondered what that felt like.
Lunsford's reservoir was located in the 90 acres of thick woods passed down through a long line of lazy Lunsfords. It was too much trouble to try to keep people away from the reservoir, and the maintenance would be too much hassle if they turned it into a park. And this was the rural South, so they'd be damned if they sold their family land, or worse, gave it to the government. So they posted no trespassing signs everyone ignored, and left it at that. There was a trail about a half mile long from the gravel parking lot to the reservoir. Tyler walked behind Claire all the way there, and she felt very conscious of her body, of what he knew of it, things about her no one else knew. She thought she could feel his eyes on her, but when she looked over her shoulder, his eyes were always elsewhere. Maybe she felt them there because she wanted them there. Maybe this was how people coped after intimacy. When you tell a secret to someone, embarrassing or not, it forms a connection. That person means something to you simply by virtue of what he knows. Finally, the path opened and the noise swelled. The reservoir itself was a forest lake with a natural beach on one side and a high promontory of southern yellow pines on the other side. The kids climbed up in order to dive into the water. It was indeed as crowded as Sydney said it would be, but they found a place toward the back of the beach and spread the quilts.
This is the end of disc number 5. Please insert disc number 6. This is disc number 6.
The reservoir itself was a forest lake with a natural beach on one side and a high promontory of southern yellow pines on the other side that kids climbed up in order to dive into the water. It was indeed as crowded as Sydney said it would be, but they found a place toward the back of the beach and spread the quilts. Claire had made avocado and chicken wraps and fried peach pies, and Sydney had packed Cheetos and Coke. They sat and ate and chatted, and a surprising number of people came by to say hello. Clients of Sydney's, mostly, who came by to tell Sydney that their new haircuts gave them more confidence, that their husbands noticed them more, and their mechanics were unable to shice them on their car repairs. Claire was unspeakably proud of her. As soon as Bay was finished eating, she wanted to go swimming, so Henry and Sydney walked with her to the water, which left Claire and Tyler alone.
"All right, get ready.
I'm going to tell you a story, Tyler said, stretching back on the quilt and putting his hands behind his head. Claire was sitting on a separate quilt, but she was close enough to be able to look down at him. This was a secret she knew about him, she realized. She knew what he looked like under her. What makes you think I want to hear a story?
It's either that or talk to me. I'm guessing you would rather hear the story.
Tyler, it's just that
here's the story. When I was a teenager, going to the local pool was a big deal, particularly to the kids in the colony, because we were a good 10 miles from town and pretty secluded. There was a girl I knew from school named Gina Peretti. When she developed, the boys were never the same. She would pass us in the hallways and literally take our words. We couldn't talk for days. Gina spent every day at the pool in summer. So when I was 16, I went every day I could just to stare at her in her bikini. It was toward the end of the summer when I decided to go for it. I couldn't take it anymore. I'd fantasized about her for months. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I had to talk to her. I jumped into the pool and did some laps in front of her, manly stuff, before I got out and walked over to her. So there I was, standing in front of her, deliberately blocking out the sun and dripping on her because I was still young enough to think that annoying a girl was a legitimate way of telling her I liked her. She finally opened her eyes and looked up at me and screamed. It seems my shorts had fallen way past my hips when I had pulled myself out of the water. So I was standing there, flashing her. I was almost arrested. Claire wasn't expecting that, and she laughed. It felt good to laugh. Strange, but good. That must have been horrible. Not really. 3 days later, she asked me out. Come to think of it, after that I received a lot of attention from girls who had been at the pool that day, he said, preening. Is that true? He winked at her. Does it matter? She laughed again. Thank you for that. My humiliations are yours for the asking. Humiliating or not, it was a normal thing. You were a normal teenager. You spent your summers at a pool. You've probably even been to a lover's lane. You and Sydney would have gotten along. You weren't a normal teenager?
No, she said simply. And it couldn't have come as a surprise to him.
Henry was the same way. We were the kids who embraced our legacies young.
Tyler sat up on his elbows, his eyes going to the edge of the water where Henry and Sydney were watching Bay. Someone on the beach called to Sydney. Sydney said something to Henry, and he nodded. Then she walked to a nearby gathering of women to talk.
Do you mind your sister dating him?
She's not dating him.
But why would I mind?
She said this almost defensively, not wanting him to know how much she was still struggling with Sydney spending so much time with Henry. That night in the garden was weakness. She was stronger than that.
I guess I just don't want you to be disappointed. It's a difficult position being interested in someone not interested in you.
Oh, Claire said, realizing she'd misunderstood what he meant. I'm not interested in Henry.
Good, he said, standing up and kicking off his shoes. I think I'll go for a swim.
But you still have your clothes on.
I love a lot of things about you, Claire, he said, reaching his hands over his head and grabbing his shirt at his shoulders and pulling it off. But you think too much.
He ran to the water and dived in.
Wait a minute. Did he mean that?
He loved her?
Or was that just one of those things people said? She wished she understood these games. Maybe she could play if she did. Maybe she could do something with these feelings for Tyler that alternately pinched and stroked her, feeling so painful and so good at the same time.
Henry was still watching Bay, so Sydney walked back to the quilts and sat beside Claire.
Was that Tyler?
Yes, Claire said, watching his head emerge from the water. He shook his head and his dark hair flung around and stuck to his face in wet ropes. Bay was laughing at him, so he swam over to her and splashed her. She splashed back. Henry, at the edge of the water, said something to them, and they paused for a moment, looked at each other, then they splashed Henry. Hesitating only a moment, Henry took off his shoes, pulled his shirt over his head, and jumped in after them.
"Wow," Sidney said. "Milk. It does a body good."
"There's a reason I am the way I am, you know," Claire blurted out, because she had to explain it to someone. Sidney grabbed a can of Coke and turned to her curiously. "We didn't have a home, Mom and I, the first 6 years of my life. We slept in cars and homeless shelters. She did a lot of stealing and a lot of sleeping around. You never knew that, did you?" Claire asked. Sidney had the Coke can halfway to her mouth, frozen. She slowly shook her head and lowered the can. "Sometimes I got the feeling you romanticized what her life was like before she came back to Bascom. I don't know if she ever intended to stay, but when we came here, I knew I was never going to leave again. The house and Grandma Waverly were permanent things, and when I was young, that's all I ever dreamed of. But then you were born, and I was so jealous of you. You were given that security from the moment you entered the world. It's my fault, our relationship as kids. I made it contentious because you were from here, and I wasn't. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I'm not good at being a sister. I'm sorry I'm not good with Tyler. I know you want me to be, but I can't seem to help it. I can't help but think how temporary everything is, and I'm scared of that kind of temporary. I'm scared of people leaving me." "Life is about experience, Claire," Sidney finally said. "You can't hold on to everything." Claire shook her head. "I think it might be too late for me."
"No, it's not!"
Sidney suddenly slapped the quilt beside her angrily.
"How could Mom ever think that was the kind of life for a child? It's inexcusable. I'm ashamed of myself for envying her, and there are times I think I've turned out just like her, but I'm not leaving you. Never. Look at me, Claire. I'm not leaving."
Sometimes I wonder what her reason was. She was a smart woman. Evenell told me she was a crackerjack student before she dropped out. Something had to have happened. Whatever the reason, there's no excuse for her messing up our lives like she did. We can get past this, Claire. We can't let her win, okay? Words were easier said than implemented. So Claire said, "Okay." Then she wondered how in the world she was going to get past something that had taken her decades to perfect. They stared at the water for a while. Bay had grown tired of the splashing game, and she swam back to the beach and walked over to Claire and Sidney. Henry and Tyler were still splashing at each other, each trying to make the biggest splash with his hand.
"Look at those two," Sidney said. "Boys, the both of them."
"This is nice," Claire said. Sidney put her arm around her. "Yes, it is." At the same time Sidney and Claire were enjoying the reservoir, Emma Clark Madison was getting ready to spend some quality time with her husband. Hunter John's desk in his office at work wasn't as comfortable as his desk in his office at home. The dark paneling on the walls and the ugly metal desk had been there since Hunter John's father ran the business. Emma found herself laughing at the thought of Hunter John's mother, Lillian, coming to the plant and greeting John Sr. this way. Lillian definitely would have changed the desk if she had. The metal was damn uncomfortable on one's bare bottom. Hunter John's receptionist said that he was giving a tour of one of the plants and would be back in a few minutes. Perfect. It gave Emma enough time to undress and drape herself across his desk, wearing only stockings, garters, and a pink ribbon tied around her neck. She'd never surprised him at his office like this. Oh, she'd come by to bring him lunch, and they'd neck a little sometimes, but they'd never actually had sex at work. There were very few places she and Hunter John hadn't done it. It was a lot of work trying to keep things interesting, trying to keep Hunter John's attention focused only on her so he wouldn't think of Sidney or maybe how his life hadn't turned out quite like he wanted. Emma would never tire of trying to make her husband happy. She liked sex, after all. No, she loved sex. It was just difficult sometimes to keep going when she didn't know if this was really what he wanted. She wanted Hunter John to love her. But in the end, if he didn't, she didn't want to know. She would take this over not having him at all. She wondered if her mother settled like this. She wondered if love mattered to Ariel at all. She heard Hunter John's voice approaching his office and opened her legs a little wider. And in walked Hunter John's father.
"Whoa, Nellie!" John Sr. said.
Emma screamed and rolled off the far side of the desk.
"What's wrong?"
She heard Hunter John enter the office as she scooted into the recess of the desk and hugged her knees to her chest.
"I think I'll just leave you and your wife alone for a while," John Sr. said.
"My wife? Where is she?"
"Under the desk. Her clothes, however, are over there on the chair. Really, son, this is no way to run my business."
Emma heard the door close. Then Hunter John's footsteps approached, and he knelt facing her.
"Damn it, Emma, what are you doing here?"
"I wanted to surprise you."
"You never come here for this. Why now?
Why, on the day my father decides to show up without warning for a tour to see if I'm running the place right?
My father just saw you naked. I can't believe this."
She crawled out from under the desk. What his father thought meant the world to Hunter John, and she'd just embarrassed them both. How did things go so wrong so fast? Everything had been fine. At least, things were pushed under the rug where no one thought of them until Sidney came back. Why couldn't she have stayed away? "I'm sorry," she said, going over to her clothes and starting to dress.
"What has gotten into you lately? You are all over me. You never want to go out together. You call me 16 times a day. Now you show up here like this?"
She pulled her dress over her head and slid her feet into her heels.
"I need to know,"
she hesitated. "That you love me," she thought.
"Need to know what?"
"That you're going to stay with me."
Hunter John shook his head.
"What are you talking about?"
"I've been worried. Ever since Sidney came back."
"You've got to be kidding me," Hunter John said. "You've got to be kidding me. This is about Sidney? Go home, Emma."
He went to the door without another look at her.
"I have to catch up with my dad and try to explain this to him."
"Do you know what I heard today from Eliza Beaufort?"
Emma said brightly at dinner that night. "Sidney and Claire Waverly went on a double date to Lunsford's Reservoir.
What does Sidney think she's doing? No one our age goes out there. And Claire, can you imagine Claire at the Reservoir?"
Hunter John didn't look up from his dessert. It was his favorite chocolate cake with buttercream frosting. Emma had ordered it especially for him. Instead of answering her, Hunter John wiped his mouth and put down his napkin.
"Come on, boys," he said and pushed back his chair. "Let's go toss a football."
Josh and Peyton immediately jumped up. They loved when their dad played with them, and Hunter John always made time for his boys.
"I'll come with you," Emma said. "Wait for me, okay?"
Emma rushed upstairs and changed into a red bikini, the one Hunter John liked. But when she came back down, they hadn't waited. The pool was right off the tiled family room, so she walked out into the balustrade that looked over the lawn below. Hunter John and the boys were playing in the yard, their hair already wet with sweat. It was 7:30 in the evening, but still light and still sweltering. Summer was a lady who didn't give up her spotlight easily. Emma understood that. She liked summer. The boys were home, and there was so much daylight that there was still time to do things with Hunter John when he got home from work. There was no sense in getting her hair wet if Hunter John wasn't going to watch her swim, so she put on a sarong and cheered on the boys from the patio. She couldn't wait for football season. Going to the high school games, sitting in front of the television on Sunday afternoons and Monday nights. It was something they did together as a family, something that Sidney had never done with Hunter John. Sidney had gone to football games when Hunter John played, but she didn't really like the game. Emma loved it. She loved it because he loved it. But Hunter John gave up the game when he didn't go to Notre Dame. He gave it up because of her. When the sun began to set, Emma brought out a pitcher of lemonade. Soon, the boys and Hunter John made their way up to the pool. "Lemonade," she said. But before she could finish, the boys had jumped in the pool to cool off. Emma shook her head indulgently. Hunter John was walking toward her. She smiled and held a glass out. "Lemonade." She didn't even get the word out before he passed her and walked into the house. He hadn't said a word to her since the incident in his office that afternoon. She didn't want the boys to know anything was wrong, so she waited for them to play in the water a while, then got them towels and made them get out. She shooed them to their rooms to change and watch television. Then she went to find Hunter John. He was in their steam shower, so Emma lifted herself to sit on the bathroom counter facing the stall and waited for him to come out. When the door opened and he emerged, her breath caught. He could still do this to her. He was so beautiful. He had just washed his hair, and she could see how much it was thinning, but that didn't matter to her. She loved him so much. "We need to talk," she said. "I need to know why you never want to discuss Sidney." He looked up, startled to find her there. He grabbed a towel and dried his hair vigorously. "I think the more important question is, why are you so obsessed with her? Have you noticed that Sidney isn't actually in our lives? Has it escaped your attention that she hasn't actually done anything to us?" "She's done plenty just by being back," she said. And his movements stopped. His face was still hidden by the towel. "You won't talk about her. How do I know you're not talking about her because you still have feelings for her? How do I know you didn't take one look at her and remember all the choices you had before I got pregnant? How do I know if you went back, you would do the same thing? Would you sleep with me? Marry me?" He slid the towel off his head. His expression was tight as he walked up close to her, which made her heart beat faster with both fear because he looked so angry and with anticipation because he was so damn sexy. "How do you know?" he repeated incredulously, his voice low and vibrating. "How do you know?" "She's been places. You always wanted to travel." "What have you been thinking these past 10 years, Emma? The sex and the boob job and the sexy clothes? The perfect dinners and the football games? Was all of that because you thought I didn't want to be here? Was any of that because you loved me at all? Or have you been competing with Sidney all this time?"
"I don't know, Hunter John. Have I?"
"That was the wrong answer, Emma," he said, and walked out.
"Claire, are you awake?" Sidney said from the doorway of Claire's bedroom that night. She wasn't surprised to hear Claire say, "Yes." Claire never slept much when they were young. She used to stay out in the garden until their grandmother called her in. And Sidney remembered that Claire would clean the house or make bread while everyone else slept. This was the first and only place she'd felt any real security, and Sidney understood now that Claire had either been trying to make it her own or had been trying to earn her keep so she could stay. Either way, it hurt to think about how Sidney had thought Claire was just anal and odd, how she didn't understand what Claire had been through. She walked into Claire's room, the turret bedroom that had once been their grandmother's. Grandma Waverly had covered the walls with her quilt hangings, but Claire had replaced them with framed black-and-white photos and a couple of old family prints. The walls were pastel yellow, and the floors were covered with calico-colored throw rugs. Sidney's eyes went right away to the place where Claire obviously spent most of her time in the room, the comfortable window seat. There were stacks of books on the floor beside it. Sidney went to the bed and looped her arm around one of the bottom posts. "I need to tell you something." Claire sat up on her pillows. About the past 10 years.
Okay, Claire said quietly.
There had been a chance, on the quilts at the beach, to tell Claire this, but she hadn't been able to do it. She didn't know it then, but she was waiting for night, because it was the sort of thing that needed darkness to tell. There wasn't a doubt in her mind now that Claire would understand, and she owed it to Claire to tell her. David wasn't going away. I went to New York first, you know that. But after that, it was Chicago, then San Francisco, Vegas, then Seattle. I've known a lot of men, and I did a lot of stealing. I changed my name to Cindy Watkins, an identity I stole.
Mom did that too, Claire said.
Do you think she did it for the thrill? Because it was thrilling, but it was exhausting too. Then Bay came along. Sydney moved to sit at Claire's feet, just to feel her near, to be able to touch her if Sydney got too scared. Bay's father lives in Seattle. That's where I met him. David Leone. She swallowed, frightened by saying his name out loud. Leone is Bay's real last name, but not mine. We never married. David was a scary man when I met him. But I'd known scary men before, and I thought I could handle him. I was getting ready to leave him. That's what I always did when things got too intense. But then I found out I was pregnant. I didn't realize how having a baby could make you so vulnerable. David started hitting me, and he got more and more violent. When Bay turned one, I left him. I took Bay to Boise, went to beauty school, got a job. Everything seemed to be going so well. Then David found us. I lost a tooth and couldn't see out of my left eye for weeks after his payback. What good would I be to Bay dead? So I went back with him, and he made my world smaller and smaller and more hellish until the only three things I knew were Bay, David, and his anger. Sometimes I used to think it was punishment for living the way I did before I met him. But then I met a woman at the park David let me take Bay to 3 times a week. She knew what was going on just by looking at me. She got me that car and helped me escape. David doesn't know my real name, and he thinks I'm from New York, so this was the only place I knew to go, the only place he wouldn't find me. Claire sat up straighter and straighter the longer Sydney talked. It was dark, but she felt Claire's assessing gaze. I guess I just want you to know that I understand how you felt when you came here when you were 6. I took everything I had here for granted, but I've come to realize this is the only security I've ever known. I want that for Bay. I want to erase everything she's seen, everything she's known because of me. Do you think that's possible? Claire hesitated, and that was all the answer Sydney needed. No, it wasn't possible. Claire never forgot. So, those are my secrets, Sydney sighed. They don't seem as big as I thought they were. Secrets never are. Do you smell that? Claire suddenly asked. I've smelled it before. It's like cologne. It's him, Sydney whispered, as if he would hear her. I brought that memory with me. Quick, get in bed, Claire said, and threw back the sheet. Sydney darted in, and Claire tucked the sheet around her. It was a humid night, and all the upstairs windows were open, but Sydney was suddenly cold, and she snuggled against her sister. Claire put her arm around her and held her close. It's okay, Claire whispered, resting her cheek on the top of Sydney's head. Everything's going to be okay.
Mommy?
Sydney turned quickly to see Bay in the doorway. Hurry, honey, get in bed with me and Claire, Sydney said, throwing back the sheet as Claire had done. They held on to each other as thoughts of David drifted out the window.
The next morning dawned bright and sweet, like ribbon candy. Claire opened her eyes and stared at the bedroom ceiling, the same ceiling her grandmother had woken up to and stared at every day of her life. She turned her head and saw Sydney and Bay, fast asleep, turned into each other. Sydney had been through and done more than Claire could ever imagine. That much experience, that much change would devastate Claire. Or maybe, even as extraordinary as it was life. Everyone had stories to tell. She looked back up at the ceiling. Even her grandmother. Sydney said that Grandma Waverly had gone to Lunsford's Reservoir. As shocking as that was, Claire assumed she had gone there with her husband-to-be, but then Claire began to wonder about those old photos of her grandmother before she married her husband, when she was a pretty young woman with a joyful smile and hair that seemed perpetually in motion, as if she'd been followed around by a lovesick breeze. The photos were of her with several different boys, all with the same looks of admiration on their faces. On the backs of the photos, her grandmother had written, "In the Garden with Tom," and "At Homecoming with Josiah." Then there was the one with just the name, Carl. Her grandmother had a life Claire hadn't known about or even imagined. She had tried so hard to know everything about Grandma Waverly, to be everything she was. But Grandma Waverly must have sensed something in Sydney, a kindred soul with Sydney's brightness and popularity. She gave Claire the wisdom of her old age, but she gave Sydney the secrets of her youth. Claire didn't have a single photograph that someone years from now would see and think, "That boy loved her." She got out of bed and made breakfast for Sydney and Bay. It was a nice morning, lots of chatter and good feelings. No scent of anything bad in the air. Sydney left for work by the back door, calling over her shoulder as she left, "There's a whole bunch of apples out here."